Hey, folks, what a show we have for you today. Very excited about it, but I'm also very excited to tell you about the sponsor we're working with here over at Verbal Shenanigans. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16. You can retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire career and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today or tweet them at DSC Fantasy. That's at DSC Fantasy on Twitter or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. All right, guys, let's get to today's episode.
Hi, this is Chris from Fences. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome, 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 ladies and gents. Everybody else in between. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Mike, how are you?
In between ladies and gentlemen?
Well, I figure that's the whole spectrum. Everybody. If ladies was all the way in the left and men were all the way in the right, we're everything in between.
I mean, I guess we're inclusive. We got absolutely nothing against anybody out there. We have had AJ Mattioli on several times on the show.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was trying to include everyone. I don't appreciate you breaking down my terrible intro.
Well, I can understand ages everywhere in between. I think we're the first podcast to ever go genders and everything in between.
Well, you know what? We're breaking barriers every day, and we're redesigning the wheel as we go. Like we are trailblazers here on the show is what we like to say. We are trailblazers. No one has ever done a podcast like ours where they interview interesting people. No one.
I don't know. We're trailblazing. I don't know what the opposite of trailblazing. Trail gently walkers. I don't know.
We just like to go on the trail. That's all. We like to go on the trail that other people have plowed. A nice, well marked trail is what we like to do.
Yeah, but yeah. All that wooded areas. No, that ain't for Verbal Shenanigans or their audience. Heck no. You stick to the trail and you just find your way to the end.
Correct. Correct. But anyway, welcome guys. Every week, if you're tuning in, what we do here is I don't know, banter about life a little bit, play some dumb games, and then bring on a guest to salvage the episode. So if you want to fast forward the first half hour and then cut it short the last half hour, you barely have to listen to us. We basically just ask questions.
Yeah. We just want to give a heads up. Sometimes we put the interview about 37 minutes in, so we just fool you. We're like, go 30 minutes in, and then you get something weird from us.
Yeah, we always stack our best 7 minutes right before the interview. Like that's like our prime time. Our best material, we're going to stick it right before the interview so you can't skip past us.
Yeah, like if you think of like the greatest shows of all time, like I Love Lucy or MASH and something like that. Imagine that happening in the 7 minutes where you thought you were about to listen to an interview.
Yeah, and then something we also like to do is we like to start the interview and then just in the middle of it, put like 7 minutes of us talking and then go back to the interview.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we don't have sponsors. So we just add gibberish in between just to make sure it's like you are still listening to the show. Did you fall asleep while playing this podcast?
Right.
Like we will put messages in your head while you're sleeping. Do not put it past Verbal Shenanigans. You will have nightmares and sleepwalk and do our bidding if you fall asleep during our episode.
Correct. Mike, I saw today that apparently it's been brought up to Congress to... Now, I made a joke about it on Facebook. That's why it it came to my mind. But apparently in Congress, people are proposing for the voting age to be dropped to 16. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not objected to it. I mean, no matter where you put the line, somebody's going to go, well, I know some smart whatever age people, so...
Yeah.
I don't find it atrocious in any way. I mean, pretty much at 16, you're getting your driver's permit, so you're basically at the cusp of adulthood. Yeah. So I guess you have a right to vote then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have, like, none of my actual opinions are ever like well thought out or like deep. Like my political opinions can be swayed like this. Like I could talk to you and then talk to someone on the other side and be like, oh yeah, I agree with him too. Like I'm very much a willow in the wind when it comes to things. Like I don't
flip flop.
Sometimes I get mad at myself. I'm like, what do you believe in? And then I sit there and just think about like dumb stuff all day long. That's why I do this. But
I'm the same way, though. I mean, I'm not like one of those. Just gonna be the truth. This is. I'm just always one of those. I think this. No. Okay.
Well, apparently you're also the sound effects guy, though. You know.
Well, I mean,
you're like Michael Winslow.
I know everything. I know how to use the trails. I know all the genders in between.
Right.
I'm very fluent in what's going on in this universe, and I don't get mad when you have an opposing opinion.
Well, what it did for me was reflect a little bit, have me reflect a little bit on Scott at age 16, and would I be ready to vote and make informed decisions? And I kind of started thinking about what I was like at 16. So, Mike, if you could put yourself in that time machine and go back like 50, 60 years, however old you are, and think about when you were 16. Like I got back at 16, and here's the things that like I was doing. Like at 16, I was pretty much just still obsessed with playing soccer. Like that's what I did.
Okay.
I had just given up my backyard wrestling career, which we've talked about on the show. Probably
it was a hell of a retirement match. Yeah. I saw it on the internet last night. I mean, the whole crowd was crying. They kept on screaming, one more match.
And that tape,
you just had to shake your head.
That tape is somewhere. And if I could find it, I would love to upload clips and us break those down on the podcast or put them on social media or something because it is so bad. So I probably stopped doing that around 15. The biggest thing in my life was having sleepovers with my friend Alex and watching mob movies like all night long. And like sneaking some booze from somewhere. That's probably I think 16 was when I first like had a couple drinks and we would have like sneak like vodka from his mom's, I don't know, cabinet and then fill it with water and we would watch mob movies. Like that was my life. We would drive around with friends and one of the big things we did back in the day, which we thought was hilarious, not sure it's that hilarious now, but we would take like things off people's lawns, like lawn gnomes and goose. Like we had this big ceramic goose that we took. It was probably like 60, 70 pounds. It was so heavy. It was all dented up. And we would put that goose in like weird situations on your friend's lawn. So let's say we went out, Mike, and we dropped you off. And there was like four of us. The three of us would be like, oh man, let's wait a little while and go goose Mike. So some of the ways the goose ended up on people's lawns was one person put it in like a noose swinging from like their front yard's tree. One person did it to me. They goosed me. They put it in the driveway and took like cottage cheese and made it look like the goose was like pooping up the driveway. One time we just had it sticking out of someone's mailbox, like the head, like on top. We put it in someone's passenger seat. Like these were the things that I was really thinking about. I had a friend, and I posted in this joke, we would dare him. He was like the friend that would do anything for money. Like you could, if you had a couple of quarters banging around in your pocket and your buddy had a dollar or two, you can get this guy to do something. And it was always like eating challenges. So we would be driving around, stop in ShopRite, and be like, hey, Mike, what do you want? His name is Mike. would you eat? And we'd walk down the aisles and pick something. And he'd try. And I distinctly remember being in the ShopRite parking lot. And we went in the store and we bought ham glaze, a can of ham glaze. Mm-hmm. And there was like, there had to be 10, 11 of us. And we scrounged together. It could not have been more than $8, maybe. And I remember there was a bunch of change in there. And this kid, this kid, sure enough, cracked the ham glaze, chugged that. Now, ham glaze does not come out like water. It comes out like syrup. Like, it takes a long time. And he's just wringing the ham glaze into his mouth. And I remember him throwing up in the ShopRite parking lot. Like, so what I'm trying to do is paint a picture of me at 16. There was no room, not even a small studio apartment in my head for rent for politics and making life decisions and knowing what the hell was going on in the world.
Well, I mean, number one, if I was a part of your group, I would take your love of mafia movies and The Goose and combine it where you would wake up in the morning and there'd be a goose head under your blanket.
We thought about doing that. We tried to get into my friend's house and his mom wouldn't let us. We wanted to put the goose in his bed. She was,
all right, parents.
She was not a good mom. She was like a witch.
Yeah. If you are out there and your son or daughter's friends come up and say, "Hi, we're going to put a goose in your child's bed," you let them in. You let them have that fun. That is a life lesson for your child.
And other,
that when they wake up, you will tell your child, "You see that? They got up early and they thought of something. Now you do something with your life."
Yeah, like, it was harmless fun in the end, really. I mean, other than, I guess, we stole the goose. That probably wasn't good. But it was kind of harmless fun. Another thing we loved to do, I had like three friends that worked at this cheap movie theater. It would always get like the movies like a month after they came out.
Oh, yeah, the dollar movie theater.
Yeah, so I had three friends. One of them was actually Dom, who listens to this show. But I don't think I paid for a movie in high school in 4 years. We would just go hang and be like, "Hey, let's go check out this Corky Romano movie, see what it's all about." And then it would just end up with us like hanging out in the lobby and like getting free popcorn and just messing around. There was like no authority there. They would leave like two 16-year-old kids like in charge of the whole movie theater.
I just imagine you're going through high school and any hot movie comes out, you're like, no, I got 2 months before I can see it. No.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing The Matrix like three times because it was just free. And that, as I'm reflecting back on these times, I'm wondering why I never had any girlfriends in high school.
You could have brought them to free movies. You could have goosed them, and the parents won't be mad at you for that.
Yep. Ham glaze, ham glaze for dinner, you know?
Yeah. Well, then you take her out to dinner and then it's just Johnny, whoever, chugging ham glaze. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem I have with, 16-year-old voting, you're very impressionable. I mean, you are at 18 also, but like at a high school, right? It's kind of like the problems we have on universities. They're so extremely liberal, right? Like, a lot of comics won't even perform there anymore. In a lot of places, it's a very driven agenda. I get worried about like the high schools having this one message and getting kids on one page and it causing a divide in kids that, like, okay, so we had this Trump-Biden thing. You see it every day on Facebook with your 30, 40, 50-year-old friends going at each other's throats. Now, all of a sudden, it's a divide in high school, and it becomes like a thing. No one cares. You were 17 years old. You get along with anybody. Now, all of a sudden, there's like another thing to kind of separate you.
Yeah, I think when I was 16, whatever the voting age was, I just missed out for the one election. I remember I would have voted for Ross Perot in that election. So that kind of tells you
right.
My brain was.
And you probably loved him from like Saturday Night Live impression. You probably didn't even like You probably didn't even like the real Ross Perot. You probably liked Dana Carvey or whoever was playing him.
Well, I mean, he would do those infomercials and he had like 80 charts, like something that you sit back and go, man, if he tried that now, he wouldn't even got like in a single vote. Like, there's no way somebody had the attention span, because like, you give him credit, like, he just bought It's like, oh, you're not going to bring me in? All right, I'm just buying national time. It's like we interrupt the Cosby Show for Ross Perot tonight.
So give us more insight into 16-year-old Berlew. What was he doing? What was he doing publicly, and then what was he still into privately? That's what I always love.
16-year-old Berlew. I mean, I'm trying to think. Like, I wasn't that popular in high school, so I was just kind of my own. I was probably into wrestling back then, just like watching the WWF.
All right, so far nothing's changed. Keep going.
Yeah, I remember having like the early debates of WWF versus WCW back in the, that was pre-Attitude Era, but that's when it was still whole, like kind of like a wholesome kind of debate where it's like, no, WCW has Ric Flair, like the greatest wrestler of all time, and
right,
WWF does this, but
were all your imaginary friends dead at that point?
Yeah, they weren't. That's like 6 or 7 year old Berlew. Berlew can't vote. He would have voted for an octopus that didn't exist.
Was there ever like a goodbye ceremony for them, or like they just faded off slowly, like they got Thanos snapped away out of your life?
They must have been Thanos snapped. I mean, like I said, like some of them were cartoon characters I liked, like Woody Woodpecker and Chili Willy, and then some were just like, well, that makes sense with them.
Who was,
like I said, Ollie
who
the octopus.
Chili Willy?
He was the Penguin. It was like, I don't know how to describe it. It was just like if back then when Woody Woodpecker had like had like a half an hour of cartoons, like Chili Willy would be like the one they would throw in the middle once in a while. When they didn't have enough Woody Woodpecker, it'd be a Chili Willy cartoon.
Gotcha. The B-Squad.
Nothing about him is like, you're not going to magically go on Facebook and look for a Chili Willy group, and it's like, oh my God, you guys all remember?
Well, maybe you just haven't tried hard enough. There's probably a Chili Willy like convention out there, knowing the way the world is right now. Guys,
somewhere in like upstate Washington, and everybody wears like penguin outfits, and got a scarf on. So I'm sure people wearing the scarves and his hat, wool hat.
Well, I'll tell the listeners right now, if there is a Chili Willy convention, we're on it as of next week. So next week's guest might be like the president of the Chili Willy polar plunge they do once a year in Minnetonka or something.
What are the conventions like? Well, my four friends come over. The packed house.
Yeah.
I mean, watching Beavis and Butthead, just kind of, I mean, I was just kind of a loner. I was kind of myself a lot. I didn't have a lot of friends, so I wouldn't say I had a ton of amazing stories to go, oh, this is so 16 Berlew. I think it's just I was such a loner that I probably could have been decent to come up with a political opinion and not worry about anybody else. But at the same time, it's like nobody was listening to me to care to change their mind in any way. So.
I put the joke up, and like there was like a couple. My joke was literally what I just told you. Like, I think about 16-year-old Scott in the parking lot of ShopRite making his friend choke, and people like responded seriously. A couple of them like, oh, 16-year-olds are so informed now, and this and that. And my kid, no, like people almost took it like like I was actually saying something. Like I was actually standing for something, but I don't think the average 16-year-old is ready to vote. I don't think they even need to. Like, it's not necessary. Because honestly, the whole voting thing, it's especially nowadays, just seems to bring out this like vitriol and this like awfulness in people that I almost yearn for times where I couldn't vote and I was back in the ham glaze days, you know, like where I didn't know anything about any of this stuff. And I still kind of try to almost tune it out nowadays. Of course, we've had this crazy election and a crazy president and all that stuff recently. So it's almost impossible to avoid, but I still kind of float the line in the middle and kind of call the BS out on both sides, but I don't like getting involved. Like if I'm having a barbecue, barbecue comes up again. Apparently, I have all these barbecues that I don't even know about because we bring it up 3 weeks in a row. But
Scott, just go out and buy a grill. Yeah. I mean, we all know something's going through your head. Just He's like, I don't care about Jay. I'm getting a grill.
Maybe that's like being locked up for so long, coming out of me secret. Like, I just want to have like a barbecue with friends. But
you get this like fantasy where like you light up the grill and the smoke goes up and like all your friends are in the area. Oh, what's that smell?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is so delicious. Oh, that's over Scott's. Let's all go over there. Come on.
You know he's
call
got
Jerry.
You know he's got at least 60 hot dogs over there. You know. But like, I guess I yearn for those days of like being more innocent and out of touch. I think it's just a better life, not sinking yourself into that. And I think like, you know, high school kids deal with enough groups and bullies and jocks and nerds, and in my days I remember skaters and homies was like a thing. This is just like one more thing to be ostracized, or kids to like rally behind without even really having a reason, you know what I mean, like to get fired up over Trump or fired up over Biden and pick on the opposite. Like, I feel like they have enough things to worry about, and this struggle to fit in is already so hard. I feel like it's just another thing that doesn't need to be on their plate.
Well, now that you like list out all the groups, now I'm almost intrigued. Like, if we go to a high school and we let 16-year-old votes, if there's like a Ted Cruz group, or all the boys have like the gelled back hair, yeah, and like crappy beards, mm-hmm, like it's going to be like that, like almost like Mean Girls meets Fox News. I'm down with that. I want very cartoonish kind of high school.
Here's another great movie from us, you know, like just a high school movie, but where everyone can vote. There's like Trumpsters walking around. There's like Nancy Pelosi people all over the place. There's Elizabeth Warren crew, you know, they're all just like, you know,
there's like around five kids that are into the Green Party that sit outside and smoke.
Yeah. Yeah. Like hacky sack and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I just, I'd be more on board like with like lowering the age to drink to 18, I think, than maybe lowering the voting age. I think if you could go defend your country, you should be able to have a beer. but I don't know. I feel like after high school, that's kind of like your passageway, right? Your rite of passage into like voting and all these civil liberties. Like, you're not a kid anymore. But I feel like 16-year-olds are definitely still kids.
Yeah, I feel these kids have the right to say, I'm a man or a woman, and get to sit in line for 7 hours to click a vote that doesn't count.
Exactly. But let's segue into our guest here. We have a really interesting musician here on the show. He is the lead singer of a band called Fences, like a band or his own project called Fences. They have a hit song with Macklemore, and he's been doing music for about 10 years. You might know him by his he's got a whole ton of face tattoos. Really interesting guy, but I want to bring him on the show. Here is our interview with Chris Manfield of Fences.
Hey there.
Hey, Chris, how's it going, man?
Good, how are you?
I like the Zoom name, Coyote Guts.
Oh, I forgot that I even had that.
This like 2 weeks in a row. Last week we had someone come up as what was it, Sergeant Butthole? He had it saved on.
Yeah.
Like, oh crap! I forgot about that too. So,
oh man,
it's all right, Chris. It's all right. So, Chris, thanks for giving us a few minutes here. That's Mike. I'm Scott, and I'm glad to have you on, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Where are you located at?
I'm in California.
Okay.
Like Los Angeles.
Okay, so you're right in the heart of lockdown and quarantine still.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. The only thing that's like weird about it, like, I don't really care what everyone wants to do to like, you know, make things work or something. But it was like, I went into this like sandwich place yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like I went in, I was like, you know, I could go in to like get my drink from like the little cooler.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I was already in there, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll take this. And then she's like, no, you got to go around outside and order from outside. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah, there's all, it's where I'm in New Jersey. It was the same thing. There's all sorts of like asinine backwards rule. Like you can't go into a mom and pop shop down the street. That's like a, I don't know. It sells like, it sells kitchen stuff and there's two people in it at a time, but you can go into a Walmart with 300 people in it. So
yeah, it's weird. I don't think, man, I don't know. I think a lot of it was just like, based on fear and like scrambling and trying to figure things out. But hopefully it'll chill out. I don't really like, I don't know. I've never really been too afraid of it or care or anything like that. I mean, if like, you know, I'm like a massive empath, like obviously like with, you know, the type of music I make, but right. I don't know. I kind of just don't like care about COVID for some reason. It doesn't scare me.
I guess that,
Maybe they think the drinks are in the cooler like the vaccine, so that will be safe, but the food would be hot, which would not be good for the vaccine. So that's why they have this.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like, I know you're joking, but like if someone said that was the thing, I'd be like, okay. Cause I just hate saying things all the time. I don't understand. I'm like a friend of mine, has to get like tested, like, you know, before jobs all the time. Like there was one day where they're like, okay, no, you can work, but like, we don't have the test today, but we'll test you tomorrow. So he's like,
yeah.
Like, okay. Just like, if I had COVID, theoretically I could come and like give it to everyone. And then tomorrow take the test and you tell me, no, I have COVID.
Yeah.
He was just like, what, you know? So you're right. Everything does feel kind of backwards and, you know, like street theater. It just feels like it's all in a, and there's been like times where I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Right.
Right.
Like if there's a thing going around, it's like, I don't want to like see a bunch of people like, you know, on the Jersey Shore, like licking each other's faces and shit at the bar. You know?
It's definitely still happening here. I'll tell you that much.
Oh hell yeah. Good time.
Well, I guess that leads me kind of, you know, we had over this pandemic, over the last year, we've had dozens and dozens of musicians on and artists. And I'm curious how this kind of lockdown and not being able to really perform live and tour and how it's kind of affected you as an artist. Have you been able to kind of focus on music, or has it kind of opened you up to kind of other things? How have you been spending the time basically off in a way?
Yeah, I've been writing a lot, like reading a lot and sort of like trying to like hone my craft as like a more of a writer, like I said, like author, poet, like whatever, just like a
right.
Someone who, you know, puts words in an order for like some sort of like reaction from other people or myself. So I've been really doing that, like, you know, reading, like, you know, is like, it's like cliche, but whatever. Maybe it isn't even cliche anymore, but because I don't know if people read anymore, but like reading that Kerouac book and then reading like a line and then being like, why does that line affect me?
You literally touched on one of the questions I was going to ask you. So I want you to add it. I'm not really into like talking like about what people's tattoos mean, but I did notice you had Kerouac. I think it was under your eye, and I was interested in that. I was wondering if you were a big fan of him, so I guess it's a good time to ask the question.
Yeah, I mean, he's my favorite. The way that he writes is just, I just think it's like a perfect blend of like, I don't know, like he kind of sounds like a everyman, like working class, almost like a thug. He could be in an alley like writing that, like drunk. But he also, you know, is like, you know, translating, you know, Chinese love sonnets and stuff. And so it's like, I love that sort of like polarity of like, you know, kind of like genius, but also over here. So something about the way he writes, I don't find it to be, I guess, like condescending. Because sometimes, you know, I feel mean saying this, but like, you know, David Foster Wallace or something, you feel as if he's just really just you know, like slick with the pin. And yeah. Really just show you how smart it is. And like, and I love like David Foster Wallace, like his, like, you know, some of his like idioms and prose. Like he says, like the lint from the sport coat hung in the air conditioned light, like the space above a fresh poured seltzer, you know, and that's like, he didn't have to say all that. Like, yeah. That's why.
Yeah.
But he describes everything just like in a really, it almost gets exhausting because like that's one line, but imagine that for like, you know, 1100 pages.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm just like, okay, like you're a genius. Like you can take, you know, anything. It's like you describe the color, the situation, and like, you know, like it's like, what does the color remind you of? Like, what does the texture feel like? And this and this. And it just gets a bit exhausting. Like it's fun, but like Kerouac doesn't do that. He feels like, you know, his writing feels almost like spiritual or something. Not spiritual, like, you know, in like the traditional sense, but it just feels like, I don't know. It's just, his writing seems like somebody who's in touch with something bigger, as opposed to just being like extremely educated and maybe like a little bit mentally ill or something.
Yeah.
So
I remember reading On the Road years ago. It's been a while, but I was a fan of his too.
I've seen in other interviews that talked about you like writing your memoirs, and you keep on bringing up Augustin Burroughs. I'm kind of curious what he has special to you, and also kind of on the step of talking about reading, when you talk about how you decipher everything, does that mean, how long does the book usually take you to read through? Are you still like reading it through and going back, or is it like you read a chapter and it's like, I got to go away for like 2 hours?
No, I guess, you know, there's like different, I guess there's like different types of books and stuff, like Louis Amar, like that, like Western writer. It's like, you just sort of read that stuff, you know, it's almost like, it's like just fun. It's like, there's like fun reading, and then there's reading that, it's weird, and it probably wasn't meant for that way, but like, I use it almost as like a textbook of like studying or something. And it's really interesting to think about it that way. Because I was having this conversation last night because I was like pulling up all this like weird music. And then someone was like, oh, like, why do you listen to all this? And I said, like, I want to hear everything. Like, I want to know about every kind of music. Because I say, like, you know, like, man, like, maybe I want like the snare sound from a Prince song. And maybe like, I want like, you know, the bass sound from like a Black Flag song, and like, and whatever. And you know, like a kick sound from like a frickin', you know, Kanye record. Like,
yep.
So I don't need to, I just, the way I view writing and music, just because I'm so obsessed with it and I make it, and everyone's like, oh, like, you know, not everyone, but some people sometimes have said like, oh, you're such a great writer, such a good musician, I love your music. Like, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, because I don't like kind of pigeonhole myself into this like aesthetic bubble that I think is like dishonest, because I mean, imagine how insane it would be if I was like, oh, I only listen to like Bright Eyes all day long.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was like, I just want to make, or I only listen to like Hank Williams, like all day long. Like,
yeah.
It's almost like, it's like that concept to me of like, if you were to put like a human being alone in a room with no, like it with anything, like what would they make? But then if you put them in a room with like, you know, like a Britney Spears album for like their whole life, and then you said, hey, make music, it's going to sound like that.
Right.
But if you get the entire like catalog of like all the art that's been made in the world, then all of a sudden they can make something unique, but you have to take from absolutely everything. And I think that's what it is with books. Like it's annoying that I don't just read them like normally. Like I really get like, you know, insane about the way that I, you know, think about how to like end a word, like, because you look at how someone says something and it's like, what's the most powerful way? It's like if I'm talking about myself right now, I sit at the piano shrouded by like a brown hat, right? And it's like, that's fine. But then you say like, I sit at the piano shrouded by like a coyote brown hat, like the palm of God or something. It's like, and you go like, how, like, what's the best way to get emotion? And then you realize you cross over the line where it feels like condescending or cheesy, and just trying to fucking find that exact sweet spot. So when I see things in books that affect me, I'm like, okay, like why? What? Because there's usually a key word that brings it to the point of like being valid, I think.
So what is your, like, your musical upbringing as far as when you started? Were you a kid who grabbed the guitar and started a punk band? Were you trained at all? What was the first instrument you picked up? What was your background like?
Well, I was born in 83.
Right.
And like a single mother for the most part. So she was listening to like, you know, Madonna, Prince, like Peter Gabriel. So that record was really big for me. Tracy Chapman, like just kind of all that, like, I don't know, George Michael, Tears for Fears, like just that sort of, it was like pop music, but it was all pretty freaking,
mm-hmm.
I guess like sad.
Yeah.
You know, it was like happy, but it was sad. It's like George Michael, like, I will be your father figure. I mean, that's like, that's a sad song.
Yeah.
And Madonna, like life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone. You know, it's like, shit, these are sad songs. So I listened to a bunch of that really, I don't even know, like, I guess it was, wouldn't say it was earnest. That was more like the 90s, but just really well produced and sad stuff. And that's what I like grew up kind of hearing. And then the first instrument was the guitar that I got. And then I think my uncle just was kind of like, you know, like he was excited about me having a guitar. So he would just like give me like, he actually gave me cassette tape stuff, but he would give me like just weird stuff that like just freaked me out. Like he gave me like Topographic Oceans by Yes. So he would give me these like crazy, like conceptual prog rock albums. And I'm just like, how would I ever play any of that? I'm like, how do they do that? Mm-hmm. Are they like, is there something with robots? Like, how are they?
You know, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Some of those early Yes records are wild.
Yeah. So I kind of got all freaked out on that stuff. And then I got into like jazz fusion, you know, like my orchestra, Weather Report. And then I sort of went into more like traditional jazz a little bit, but more so like, I don't know, like Coltrane, you know what I mean? Those guys.
Right.
And then, yeah, I did go to music school.
So. Okay.
Was it always kind of like the vision of being like popular and making music, or is it just kind of like a side thing, an art thing? Where was it? I mean, because usually 16, that usually means that you're like growing up thinking one thing and then something turned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure. That's the funny thing about like, you know, being like a rock star or something. I feel like that dream kind of escapes almost no one. Like, it's like such an American idea. Like I'm sure every boy like has thought of that, even if you're like a football player and actor.
Absolutely.
I'm sure the moments where you're like, man, I want to be on stage with like, you know, my dick in my pants, like Robert Plant, like a little vet.
That's how Mike generally shows up to the podcast. Just so you know, he's a little different today.
Okay. but you know what I mean? It's like this like monolith of like, yeah, it's like almost like a god or something. It's like, so I think, of course, I was like allured by that, but I didn't really understand like how to get there. You know, it wasn't like I could like fill in an application or be like, so it is completely shrouded in mystery how to get there. And I think that's why it is such a select group of people. But what I slowly realized is that it wasn't like luck, you know? And I think that would be something that sort of like a bitter father would say, you know, like it's like winning the lottery. So like, do this. I mean, I even heard Muhammad Ali like telling people to like not try to box and to just go to college. So it's like that is like certainly a thing that people try to sort of sway you from. But yeah, I just, I don't know. I just kind of, it was all I could, it was all I did. It was all I could do. So I just kept doing it. It's almost like, I mean, it sounds so cheesy and I hate to even say it, but it was just like, music to me and everything. It was like as natural as like, you know, like eating or sleeping or breathing or whatever. It just became such a, like a tight thing within my being that it was just like, I don't know. It's almost like asking a human being who's just walking around. It's like, how are you going to get like to your death? And it's like, well, you're just going to keep living. So it's like, that's how I felt about music. It was like, I'm going to just keep doing this. And then I don't know. I guess I didn't really know it was going to happen at all.
So then, you know, it's 2021. Is it strange? Is it a weird feeling to know that like Fences, it's, you know, 10 years old and, you know, it's coming on over a decade worth of now, I don't know exactly what to call it, 'cause you look at one article, it says it's, you know, alter ego, or some people call you Fences, some people call it the band. But, maybe you can clear that up, but also what is it hard to believe that it's been 10 years, if not 11 years of, making music kind of under this title?
Yeah, it's really weird because, like, I don't know, sometimes, if, you know, people say, like, even at live shows, if someone's like, because when I play live, I talk to the crowd, like, really, like, normally, like, I'm just, like, you know, I'll just, like, answer questions and be completely normal. I mean, it's not like a freaking, you know, a Q&A or, like, a TED Talk or whatever, but if someone says, like, oh, hey, play Sadie or something, I'm like, whoa, like, I was just a kid when I wrote that. Like, you know what I mean? It's really weird. It is weird. It feels like, quite honestly, I mean, it feels like a past life or something, which is kind of odd because I've been in one thing with something like consistent, yet even through that consistency, it still is that feeling. I mean, you know, you ask someone who's 20, like how they felt when they were 10, someone was 30, how they felt when they were 20.
Right.
I mean, eventually, like, the lines blur. It's like, you're not going to feel that much different, like, you know, 50 and 60. Like, it's sort of, you know, like, severity of decades change as you get older because time just moves more rapid, I guess. Yeah. And there's less change. But yeah, it's fucking crazy. When I think back at that, I'm like, sometimes I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Like, how did I have the balls to do that?
Out of curiosity, I mean, I'm looking in some of your history. It says that your first EP was discovered on MySpace. I'm kind of curious how that came about, and also how you came up with the name Ultimate Puke.
The name I didn't come up with. It was my first girlfriend. I had written a song called Running from Pigeons, and the first song I ever wrote, and I didn't write it with any intention of like starting a band or anything. I just like wrote it for her, and it was just like but it was weird because I was just trying to write basically like a little love poem to her, but I just had some chords behind it. So it was just like B minor, A major, E major. So just three chords, and then I sang it, and then, you know, I sent it to her and she was like, this is really like pretty. And I was like, oh shit, this is pretty. And I was like, that wasn't that hard to do. And she was like, you should start like a like a band. I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you even mean start a band? And then she's like, I think she was studying the play in school.
Huh.
Probably. I mean, I think she was. And then I can't confirm that for sure, but I think she was like, Vince's is a cool name. And I was like, yeah, okay. Cool. So then, you know, I think MySpace was around, but either way, it was sort of just like, I didn't say like, okay, I'm going to like be a songwriter and name this band. It was kind of just more like it came from just like a source of, or a, like a kind of an innocent scene.
Right.
And she kind of told me, just call it this. And then I remember like, you know, uploading onto MySpace and then like writing the name being like, oh, I don't know. And then like trying to like write away a cooler, longer name. And what photo do I put up? And like, and just like, I think I just put that song up. And then I, I remember what was really like a big thing is that I got GarageBand.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. I played with that for many years in garages, literally garages with my buddies and instruments and figuring stuff out.
Yeah. So that was it. So then I recorded a couple. I think I recorded like Boys Around Here, Same Tattoos, and My Girl the Horse. Like, because I just, and the reason that those all kind of sound the same is because I got this, like, I'm, I was like, thank God this guy did it. I wish I'd find him and shake his hand. But this guy at Guitar Center was like, you should get this like expansion pack. He's like, it's like country beats. So it was just like, you know, like Johnny Cash, I'm on Fire, like just that shuffle. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I got, wrote everything like on, like to that. And it like helped my sort of cadence of music. And then I sang and I was like, I can't really play piano well at the time. Cause I had a little piano like this big. Yeah. So I'd just be like just doing that over the stuff. And then it ended up just sounding like Fences. And because yeah. It was just me and shuffle beats and just like little piano sounds and acoustic and singing. And then I put it on MySpace and then Sarah Quinn like messaged me and she was just like, this is like my favorite music. And I thought it was like a fan account or a prank or something. So yeah, it was quite weird. Like the whole like kind of origin story of the band is just kind of real, real innocent, you know. It wasn't like I pulled out a sword and I was like, let's fucking go, you know.
Well, let's fast forward, kind of leading from the last question. So now 11 years or so later, you had Failure Sculptures and the deluxe version come out recently and kind of the reissue. So now you're this much further along from the garage band, sitting alone with the small computer days, but now you're sitting in a time period right now where you can't really go out and perform it to live crowds. Is there any, do you have anything kind of on the horizon as far as being able to get back out there or anything that you're working on now for fans that might be interested?
Obviously like the new EP is done. That's been recorded. I recorded that during the pandemic or quarantine. And actually I have.
Yeah, that's coming out in April, right?
Yeah, I think April 16th. I'm doing this cool thing with Jack Kerouac's estate. It's pretty crazy. I'm kind of freaked out, but I'm writing some songs for him and then going to the Big Sur cabin to record them.
Wow. Okay.
We were considering doing it at his Florida house, but he has some unreleased work. And he put it out on like a vinyl. And some of this stuff is still kind of in the works, I guess. So wow. I'm not like, you know, but and then on the other side, it'll be songs that I have written sort of about that. So it's quite crazy. Yeah. I have these books. His nephew, my phone is leaning on these books. His nephew sent me a couple of Jack's books and it was pretty, pretty weird. We've done some Zoom calls and to talk to him and sort of even consider to be a part of that legacy in a small way is crazy. So
wow.
Yeah, it's fucking cool, man. I mean, if that's all I do and then I walk away from that and get struck, you know, by a bus full of lightning bolts, I don't care. But like, I think I'm gonna go record those songs probably in the next couple days.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool. And like I said, some of that's kind of like loose and I don't know exactly like if I'm supposed to be talking about it, but it's fine.
From talking to you now, I mean, it seems like you're very deep in the thought with anything you do from art wise. Do you ever get concerned that you ever try to be like a perfectionist in some ways where you kind of go, maybe I can go deeper than this, where it might delay stuff, or you feel you have a natural cutoff and understanding of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of like, I can kind of go kind of crazy when it comes to words, I guess. Just like I it's not necessarily that I labor over them, but or have self-doubt. It's just that it's such a, I guess sort of a tall mountain to try to climb and to like you know, respect everybody before you or whatever, that like, I try really hard with words, you know, say, like, I say something like, I wrote a new song. It's like the lily pads under the soles of your feet. Right. And then I'm like, shit, like Pablo Neruda has that poem about your feet. And then I'm like, okay, goddamn. Like, and then I start like thinking about Pablo Neruda, and then like, you know, I just start thinking about all this stuff, and I get kind of crazy, and I'm like trying to like write better than them, you know? And then, but then there is a line, like I said, you go over that line and then it like becomes bad.
So right.
It's like, it's just kind of, it's kind of hard because it's like such a kind of gut thing, but yet it needs to be really, you know, intricate at the same time. So yeah, I'm probably spiraling out right now because the question's like, but it does get that way. Perfectionist, I'm not sure if that's perfectionism. I think it sort of could come across that way, but I think it exists in a little bit of a different plane, because I still feel as though I exist in like a real like honesty with what I'm doing. So it's like, you know, nobody's perfect. Like we're all, you know, we're all unique in our own way or whatever. So it's like, if you're just alive, it's like, you're doing a good job, you know,
maybe.
Or a bad, but like, who cares? I mean, you're being real. So it is being authentic. So avoiding perfectionism, because then nothing's going to happen. You don't put anything out. And I know a lot of people like that. I have some friends that are absolutely beautiful musicians, and they'll just like take like weeks on like a drum track. And I'm like, dude, nobody's ever going to fucking hear anything you're doing. And I'm like, it's right. So weird. Like, it's just, so I don't avoid that. I mean, I think, you know, it's like Charles Bukowski said that like writing should be like a good hot beer shit. And I think that that guy to be like, you know, so crass, but there is truth to that, I think.
So I'm curious, as far as your, like, do you, the approach, you know, you kind of have this approach to music, like very deep and thought out. And do you have that same approach to like, as far as your physical art, you're like your ink and, you know, you, if people are listening just on audio right now, Chris has a lot of tattoos on his face. And I'm curious, are you super well thought on your ink, or are you more of a spontaneous kind of guy?
I mean, I think that's kind of where I wear like my madness, really. Honest, I mean, like, obviously, like, there's some things on my face that, like, you know, mean stuff to me, like, you know, Kerouac, Coyote. I have, like, you know, Pitzla. It's like an Elliott Smith song. It's like Yiddish. I think it means like a lost, precious thing. And you know, I have like Sar on my face, which is Hebrew. I have, you know, things that mean something, but I do recognize that that comes from a place sort of like chaos. Just you know, just not necessarily socially, but it's like, you know, let's be honest, right?
Yeah.
What was your first, and what was there anyone that you regret getting of the tattoos?
I think my first one, I think I got like a little XO on my cheek, and I think maybe like there's like a heart over here. I just had like a couple that weren't extremely visible. As far as regretting them, yeah, I mean, I wish I had just like maybe like four of them or something. Like, yeah, I don't want. I just feel like it looks like it looks a little bit messy to me.
Gotcha. Chris, you're a super interesting guy to talk to. And you know, I really like your approach to kind of talking about your art and music and your interests. So, we really enjoyed speaking with you. We'd love to have you on down the line when you have, you know, new projects coming out and whatnot. If people want to check you out or interact with you or see what's going on, where's the best place for fans to go?
I would probably say the Instagram is pretty, I don't know if that's so. Instagram just has like six photos, but I think my management, they have the password, so they go there and they put things on there. So yeah, probably Fences Music on Instagram. was probably the one. Vince's music on Facebook, and then honestly, man, everything's just on Spotify, really.
Yep.
And the YouTube channel too, Vince's music.
Awesome, man. Chris, I hope you you stay safe out there, and you're able to get out there soon to crowds that are waiting to see you again.
I hope you can get your sandwich inside soon as well.
Yes, that too.
Yeah. That'd be great. The part of just standing on the sidewalk and eating, I'm like, I feel like I'm like a New Yorker, like in a rush all the time. And I'm like, I have all day. Like, I want to sit down.
Yeah. So, Chris, thank you for your time, man.
Yeah, thank you. It's cool.
All right, Mike. Chris Mansfield. I think it's about time, Mike, for you to show your commitment to the show.
Okay.
And finally, you know, yeah, you do the emails and you help find guests and you sit here with me every week for hours on end and you've done 300 something of these. We couldn't get a logo on a NASCAR, but we could get one on your face.
I mean, first off, it's a NASCAR car, stock car. They don't call the things that go around the NASCAR.
All right. But it's time to put the Verbal Shenanigans logo under your cheek.
On my little side here? I mean.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm just worried my stubble might carry, you know.
I don't have a lot of money, Mike, but there's things in this world that are worth investing in. And when the. You know, they always say strike while the iron's hot, get in before it gets big. This is an investment for me. I will pay for the tattoo artist to put the Verbal Shenanigans logo on your face.
So you feel the iron is hot in people looking at my cheek.
Right. So if we can start getting people looking at you, they say, what the hell is that tattoo? And maybe like it's so futuristic that people could scan it and it'll bring up like a QR code.
Like a barcode.
Exactly. Okay, right to our latest episode.
Couldn't I just have that on a shirt?
No, because no one looks at a shirt. I would look at your face tattoo, though, especially when you're going around like Sam's Club.
I'm getting out of people's way. I'm in and out. I told you. Mm-hmm. Like, the only way you would see my face in Sam's Club is in the checkout aisle being pissed off because you didn't get your stuff ready and you're taking 20 minutes to check out.
Ironically, they have a barcode scanner at the counter. So, boop, you know, right? Hey, bring you right to Verbal Shenanigans.
Yeah, maybe I can just, like, scan my cheek and it would just send the bill to you.
Right. All right, Berlo, I want to run a couple things by you. All right. So, I want to give you a news story. So, this is kind of like Mad Libs, all right? I'm going to leave out a word or two, and I want you to insert what you think the word might be of this headline, and then we'll go through the actual news story. All right?
That sounds intriguing.
All right. A man busted trying to smuggle 194 pounds of blank into the U.S. A man got busted trying to smuggle 194 pounds of what into the United States?
Now, it can't be like a normal answer, like a cocaine or something like that.
I mean, it could be if you think it is.
It could be, but that'd be kind of boring.
It'd be
a
real boring episode.
I mean, it'd be the most boring story with somebody who has 194 pounds of cocaine, but I digress.
Right.
I'm going to think it's something weird and exotic.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to go with turtle eggs.
Turtle eggs. Panel, what do you say? No, not turtle eggs, Berlo. Man busted trying to smuggle 194 pounds of Mexican bologna into the United States. Mexican bologna.
I didn't know there was that high of a demand of Mexican. I didn't know there was more than one country of bologna. I thought it was just that the world just says, yeah, it's bologna. I didn't know like we... No. This is Mexican bologna. Totally different.
First off, let's just throw a hot topic out there. One country that sells bologna is too much. Bologna is just not good.
I can't remember. I probably was 12 the last time I had a bologna sandwich.
The last time I had bologna was when my mom would make fried bologna on, like, snow days. Fried bologna. We were a little white trash, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, is there really that many bologna laws in the United States where it's like you have to get a mule? It's like, no, no, put the bologna in a condom, swallow it, take it out, you know, we'll be good.
I don't know. But a man was fined $500, $500 for trying to smuggle 194 pounds of Mexican bologna across the southern border. The 49-year-old New Mexico resident was caught by authorities around 8 a.m. on Sunday. Bologna cannot be brought across the border since it's made from pork and can potentially introduce foreign animal diseases to the U.S. pork industry. Authorities confiscated and destroyed the black market meat. It's important that travelers understand they should declare all items before transporting them to abroad to avoid fines and penalties.
I gotta say something. If the fine is only $500, I don't know what the market price is for Mexican bologna. I'm taking a chance.
I gotta imagine
194 pounds is gonna make up the $500.
See, I think 194 pounds of bologna is worth $40.
Like, I'm not gonna pay for, but there is somebody out there, 194 pounds, that wasn't just, I feel like bringing my bologna into the country. Somebody was asking for that bologna.
All right. Well, here's the next one, Mike. All right. Ready? Pigs can be trained to blank with their snouts, study reveals.
Trained to blank with their snout. So that's their nose.
Yes, that's their nose. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a scientist. Let me get through this algorithm.
This is why it's astonishing we have some of the people we have on our show. That's their nose. Yeah.
So, doctor, would you say the snout is like a nose? I'm a cancer doctor. I don't know why you're asking me this question.
Imagine you were like, snout, that's the nose. And I was like, how did you figure that out? Did you look?
Berlo, are you looking at my notes? All right, read the sentence again. Pigs are trained.
Pigs can be trained to blank with their snouts, study reveals.
Not really getting a ballpark on this one, so I'm going to say stand on their snouts.
Oh, be trained to do like a nice snout stand.
Yeah, I got a little circus in the area, and I was going to come see the snout standing pigs. And if it doesn't work, I turn them into Mexican bologna, and I make buku bucks.
There you go. But unfortunately, Mike, you were wrong again. Pigs can be trained to play video games with their snouts. They can be trained to play video games. Pigs are highly intelligent creatures, and a study released on Thursday has revealed they're skilled gamers, too. Frontiers in Psychology published a paper saying that, first off, they were working with Stanley Curtis, Mike, legendary swine researcher.
I mean, he's in my top five of swine researchers, Scott. I mean, he's on my Mount Rushmore.
You think he's top five?
He's an idol.
I don't know. Those late years in his career, questionable. Asterisk next to them.
Listen, I know you're all for the guys who juice to get up in the swine world, but you know, I put an asterisk next to them. Now him, he did it all naturally.
That's what they say, but I don't know. The paper highlights two Yorkshire pigs named Hamlet and Omelette. Good names for pigs. Often usually weighing 50 to 70 pounds. The pigs were trained at a rudimentary joystick-operated video game task that had originally been created to test chimpanzees and rhesus monkeys. They learned how to manipulate a joystick with their snouts to move a computer cursor across a screen. Once they maneuvered the cursor to hit a wall, a treat dispenser connected to the joystick would deliver a snack. The game had varying difficulty levels and number of walls that appeared on the screen from 4 to 1. The pigs, all of whom were farsighted, eventually excelled at the game, though their performance varied at higher difficulty levels. Hamlet and Omelette were also forced to retire after 12 weeks of training because they had grown too large to stand long enough to complete sessions. So basically, these pigs are just getting so fat that they're ready to be eaten after playing video games for 12 weeks.
Basically like our children who play video games today.
Exactly. But imagine losing in a game of like Pong to a pig.
Yeah, well, this is my thing. When you say video games, I mean, this is 2021. I'm not thinking Atari 2600 where they got a little bead and moving it up there. You're telling me pigs learn video games. I want to see some Grand Theft Auto with the pigs.
They're okay? not advanced for you enough.
No, they're not. And to be honest, I want these mothers who kept on saying our brains would be deteriorating from video games or we're going to become violent to have the same kind of feelings for these pigs playing these games. Well, I want people to be outraged that there are violent pigs out there because they played video games. I think that's a fair thing to do.
You're so controversial, Mike. You're so controversial. All right, next one. Blank was rescued after causing a 5-car pileup on the Australian freeway. Blank was rescued after causing a 5-car pileup on the Australian freeway.
So it's either something weird or something important. Could be both. I'm not taking that out of the options.
Well, this thing caused the 5-car pileup.
Oh, it caused the 5-car pileup.
Yep. Gotcha. Blank was rescued after causing 5-car pileup on the Australian freeway.
Yeah. It'd be great if the answer is like Nicki Minaj or something like that. Just like, what? What's she doing on the highways of Australia?
You win. No, not Nicki Minaj.
No, okay. I am going to say, I'm going to be just boring with Australia and say a wallaby.
Close, but a koala has been rescued after causing a 5-car pileup. Police said the crash in heavy Monday morning traffic in the city of Adelaide caused some injuries, but no one required an ambulance. The animal's rescuer said she got out of her car to investigate what had caused the pileup. With her coat in hand, teamed up with a stranger clutching a blanket in a bid to capture the marsupial, a concrete highway divider had blocked the koala's crossing. The koala was absolutely not damaged in any way, Tug will say. It was very active and very calm. Once the koala was in her trunk, Tugwell drove to the gas station to turn the animal over to wildlife rescuers. In the interim, the koala was able to climb from the trunk into her SUV's cabin. It decided to come in front towards me, and so I said, okay, you stay here, I'll get out. She said it started sitting for a while on the steering wheel as if saying, let's go for a drive, and that's when I started taking photos.
Well, so many things going through my head. I mean, these things live in like bamboo, like forests, right? Well, what is a koala doing in the middle of the freeway?
I mean, I don't know. What would Nicki Minaj be doing in the middle of the freeway? I have no idea.
Listen, she made that WAP song. She can do whatever she wants. She's a national treasure, even an Australian treasure. If she wants to just be singing that song in the middle of an Australian freeway, so be it. You know?
Yep.
She's the Minaj. You can't stop her. One ounce. Now, if that koala was hit and I took a selfie with it, how many points would I get for next year's
major points. That's actually, we were going to bring that back. That was my 50-pointer. Hit a koala, then take a selfie with it.
So I had to hit it first. Yeah. I can't get a pre-hit koala.
Oh, no. You got to mow it down, and then get down on your knees and take a picture of it. You really got to get PETA really mad at you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give him the middle finger, and then I'll burn down some Australian forest. I don't know.
All right, last one, Mike. New Zealand sentences. How can I say? Okay, hold on. New Zealand sentences smuggler with 947 blank strapped to her body. New Zealand sentences smuggler with 947 blank strapped to her body.
Oof. Like, so it has to be small. I can't even imagine 947 big things trying to smuggle that somewhere or get it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be very impeding.
Right.
But you know, I'm a scientist.
the snout is a nose.
Yes. Yes. Dr. Berlew is on the case. 947 strapped to her.
I picture you like coming on to like an injured pig and being like, seems to be
good news. The nose is fine. Yeah, but his leg is broken. I'm a snout psychologist, okay?
Guys, his snout seems to be intact. In case you didn't know, that's the nose area. I got this.
What about the tail? It doesn't have a special name. It's just curly. We call it the tail. All right. All right. Snout and the tail, I understand. The stuff in between, not so much.
947. What?
In New Zealand. I'm going to go back to one of my original answers. I think it's something egg related. I'm going to say like turtles.
You really like turtles, but no. 947 plants strapped to her body. 947 plants. New Zealand authorities have sentenced a woman who tried to smuggle nearly 1,000 cacti and succulents into the country strapped to her body. The woman, Wayne King Lee, 38, pleaded guilty to violating biosecurity laws after she was caught twice with plants and seeds at Auckland International Airport when returning home from China. She was sentenced to intensive supervision for 12 months and 100 hours of community service. She strapped her stockings containing 940 succulents and cacti valued at $10,000 to her body and attempted to bring them into the country. The cacti included 8 endangered and threatened species. She tried to dispose of the items in the airport toilets after attracting the attention of dogs. She was also carrying plant pots and ornaments. I mean, this girl's carrying everything. She had 142 seeds hidden in her package iPad covers on her luggage.
So many things right here. Number one, plants worth $10,000. That's about $7,000 more than my Mexican sausage or bologna that I plan to sell.
Correct.
In Georgia.
Yep.
So that is a good upgrade from
Michael's
there.
Mexican bologna business.
It's got a ring to it. It's got a ring to it. There are no snouts in my bologna. Believe me, I'm a scientist.
Berlew's Mexican bologna. It's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, I think it can work. Second thing that comes to my mind, of all the plants in the world that you want strapped to you to try to smuggle in, why do you pick cactus?
Oof, I know. What? Maybe they stick better?
I mean, I guess they're going to be in there, but somebody's going to question, why is everything you're wearing blood red?
I know. Yeah, she's probably just bleeding in the airport, and they're like, there's something going on here, ma'am.
Yeah, which leads to my third thing. Second time she got caught?
Yep, second time. Yep.
So she tried this once.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the dogs got her or the security got her or whatever, got found and thought to herself, they're not going to look for me a second time.
Nope.
That I'm just too smart about this. I go to my dealer in China that's got the nice plants, you know, the good stuff. I just tape that stuff up, get back down to New Zealand. Ain't going to expect a thing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. People do a lot of weird things. That's why I like used to love that show, like Locked Up Abroad. It was just like, yeah, we're going to just smuggle things, and every single episode ends wrong. But Berlew, it's time to get out of here. First, I want to thank Chris Mansfield for coming on the show. Berlew, anything to promote before we go?
Well, I'm going to promote a brewery that I'm going to next weekend, Fox City Brewing Company. It's in Forsyth, Georgia. They have authentic local beer. They have a great selection of food. I can't wait to go there. This will I think I calculated this will be my 33rd brewery in Georgia.
Wow.
That I'm visiting, Scott, but it's located in the historic downtown Forsyth area. Delicious food, delicious drinks. Try them out. They're called Fox City Brewing Company.
What Berlew forgot to mention, it's his 33rd today. He just did them all today. That's why he's been a little weird today. But
yeah, listen, when I have goals in life, I take care of them. Like, the wife goes, don't you have a job? I'm like, listen, I get one chance in life. I'm going to do it.
That's it. And I'm very, very excited to promote the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15 is returning. May 6th, we are coming back with limited seating. All tables are going to be socially distanced. Probably cut the crowd in about half. Details on the price and whatnot will be coming out soon. But we are coming back with good friends of the show, Mike Ciccoli, KP Burke, and Mark Riccadonna. We are back, and I cannot wait to be back on that stage and be able to perform again. And finally, back after a year and 2 months.
So your opener should be, so what's the deal with COVID? You hear me? Like, you don't need a punchline. They'll be laughing so hard. Like, I feel it would get you right to your first act.
The problem with, like, jokes now, too, is, like, you can't be like, the other day I was at a party. Like, no, you weren't. The other day.
Oh, God!
Yeah, there's no more other day. I did this and do the same joke for 3 years. But so excited to be back at Tap House 15, one of the best places in New Jersey, especially for beer and food. So we will be back. I'll put the info up on our Instagram. So other than that, guys, please follow us at Verbal Shenanigans at Twitter. On Instagram, like us, love us, share us. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
Coming in soon, Berlew's spicy Mexican bologna.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't own me. He doesn't own me. He doesn't own me. He doesn't own me. Just escape. Arrows land for falling. Drinking water in a picture.